This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast here on placetobenation.com and all the other listeners at anywhere else who's listening to us or has been listening to us over the past, we're almost hit a year here. Thank you for joining us. I'm glad that you're here in this kind of a slow month of August as we kind of like try to monitor other portions of the NBA. But we have a little bit of a special episode. But before I get into that, I want to introduce my co-host, and his name is Adam Murray.
Hola.
You're shuffling there for a minute.
We're going to talk about what, preseason football or something, or talk about Deflategate or something?
I am so tired of Deflategate. You live out there in Boston. I can't even stand it, and I live out in the deep south.
Sick of it. It's just, you know, there's a reason I've stopped watching football.
What you thought of Tom Brady's court sketch? Very Jackson Pollock-esque.
Like, that's what we're reduced to, is criticizing court sketch
artwork.
People.
We're criticizing artwork.
You know, I don't even know why we have court sketches this decade or this, you know, time of history, and there's really no reason for it, but...
It's like when the Japanese news does those cartoons because they can't get legal footage, you know, that kind of thing. They should have just done that instead. They should have just had a cartoon.
It's just too much, like, okay, you have nothing to report. Stop trying to generate no news. Everybody's sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who's reporting is sick on it. Then how about just stop reporting? It's simple. Let's just...
So you're tired of all the American the football craziness, and especially down here in the South with SEC football kicking up. You know, you're an LSU fan, so you know very good and well how that goes. And in August, everyone's kind of gearing up, you know, the NFL's getting started. But you tried to take a little bit of an excursion this summer just to kind of get away from all the American wahoo. Where did you wind up going to?
You know, people, you know, in the Midwest, you know, what do you usually do? All right, let's go drive a couple hours to a lake, you know, get away. You know, we don't, everything is so packed up tight here. I could go drive to, you know, 4 hours to New York City, or I could just go up to Montreal and go up to Canada. So it's just fun to be, you know, it's just a 4 or 5 hour drive, and all of a sudden you're somewhere completely different. You have completely different money. Your cell phone now is roaming. And,
How many times have you been to Canada?
Oh, I've been dozens.
Do you have a favorite province? Have you been to more than one?
Toronto's the biggest. Toronto's just the closest. Yeah. It's like a cleaner New York City, basically.
Yeah, I'm looking at a map right here. I'm not sure if it's geographically the biggest, but Quebec goes pretty far. It goes all the way out through the bay.
Yeah, but that just goes north, and there's nothing. Everything is situated in, like, you know, the hockey cities is pretty much where it is. Like, once you go, like, for example, Manitoba, once you go outside of Winnipeg, the next big, you know, Winnipeg is a city of like 600,000 to 700,000 people, you know, the size of New Orleans, Denver, Minneapolis, Boston. Once you get out of that, the next biggest city is like maybe 100.
Yeah.
In the entire big, huge area. There's literally absolutely nothing between, you know, once you get west of Toronto, you might have a couple, you know, 100,000 cities, which, as you know, aren't big.
Yeah.
And there's literally nothing around it for miles on end, so everybody flocks to these city centers. Like, Toronto or Vancouver is where people want to go. It's their Hollywood. It's where all the TV stations, all the radio stations.
Now, you were in the Quebec side where, you know, French-speaking is almost, it's basically a nationality, per se. So, did you have to freshen up on your La Francais?
Oh, that's just the funniest thing. It's just like, yo, you're like an hour from Vermont. How do you not know? You know, I'm just like, give me a coffee. Like, oh, no, I do not know English. I'm like, number two, just coffee. And, you know, for the most part, like Montreal, they all speak English and French. And the further north you get, Quebec's trying to, you know, separate themselves from Canada. Mm-hmm. But for the most, you know, it's a, you know, dual, both languages are official, so technically you both learn them in school. It's just most people, how much foreign language do you remember from ninth grade? I doubt too much.
Not as much. And I did 4 years of French. So if anybody would have remembered it, it'd have been me. And I end some of college for electives, and I really don't know my French anymore, unfortunately. If you gave me like a good tutorial for like a good day or two, like a seminar,
that, just French fries, yeah. French toast.
I could probably remember some of the phrases and some of the conjunctions and some of the accents and how to use them. But I would definitely need a few days to try to re-remember the things that I learned when I did French. You know, Spanish is kind of the most popular one in high school because it's like seen as like, I know French is seen as like the romantic country, but it seems to me like people think Spanish is like a slicker language. It's easier to learn.
Well, Spanish was just easy to learn because Everything just rhymed and then.
Now, my brother did it the hard way. He did Latin and Greek.
I also did Latin and Greek, and then I forgot all of it.
Boy, but with the symbols in Latin, it's so hard. So hard. He showed it to me, and I could never figure it out. You know?
Well, you know, that's the once you that's sort of half the key of just, you know, mm-hmm. learning anything. But, you know, we're getting away from Canada. Canada's just, it's a cool place.
Yeah, I'm looking at the provinces. There are 10 of them. There's only, I'm looking here, and there's only 6 of them that top over a million in population. Those include Alberta. Any wrestling fan will know Alberta because that's where Calgary, Alberta, Canada, that's where the home of Stu Hart's Dungeon, the infamous Hart family. Saskatchewan, that's 4 million in the population as of July of 2014. Saskatchewan is at 1.12 million. British Columbia, which is where Vancouver is, that's 4.6 million. That would be the third biggest. Manitoba, 1.28 million. Quebec, which is where you visit, 8.2 million in population. And then the big one is obviously Ontario, 13.6 million.
And like I said, all the, you know, everybody is just centralized where the hockey teams are, basically. Like you mentioned, Saskatchewan and Manitoba, literally nothing because what's right below them? Montana and North Dakota. You got nothing there. There's really nothing above it. Mm-hmm. You have a few. Saskatchewan's cool because they have like towns like Moose Jaw and just really funky names. But for the most part, like there's nothing there. So you have everything is either on the West Coast, just north of Vancouver. You have is all the mountain, the ski resorts.
Yeah, because right north of British Columbia is the Yukon. I mean, and I'm not talking about the Huskies of Yukon. I'm talking about the really fucking cold Yukon. You know.
Yep, and then you know, just the East Coast, you know, right just south of Toronto is Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So it's just a quick hour drive to Toronto.
Just to pay respects, the ones I didn't mention because they were smaller in population, Newfoundland and Labrador. That's kind of like in the upper rim of Quebec. Pretty far past the border of Maine, you know, in the northeast United States. And then you got these smaller ones that are kind of like sandwiched in there near the main area. And that's like Prince Edward Island, which I didn't even know existed. Another one is New Brunswick, and then Nova Scotia, which a lot of you know that the capital of Nova Scotia is Halifax. So, have you ever visited those smaller provinces?
We need to have a new segment. Andrew tries to figure out world geography.
I told you this was not my strong suit. I did not know anything about this. But we're really just doing this to transition so that we can talk about Canada and basketball because there actually is a kinship there, and it's actually going stronger than ever at this time. Let's talk I don't want to go all the way into the details with basketball in Canada as a whole. You know, the only medal they've ever had, I think they had the silver medal in the 1936 Olympic Games in Berlin. That's the one that Nazi Germany presided over. So that just gives you an idea of how long it's been since, you know, Canada had really like elite success on the basketball realm from a world stage. The NBA did have a Toronto franchise in the 1940s, I want to say. In fact, they may have won an NBA. Either won an NBA championship or they reached an NBA finals, but I think that was back when it was still called the BAA. This was before they even had an NBA per se. This may have been the early 40s because the NBA didn't begin until the early 50s. What were your memories about those teams?
Just lots of black and white grainy footage. It's just like, you know,
I don't know if I've ever even seen footage of it. I don't even know if it really exists.
it's just there's no, you know, back then there's no NBA. So, all right, you just have basically one star player who can win it for your country. Okay, you're going against, you know, who were the best teams in the 30s? Harvard and Princeton and all the Ivy League schools mm-hmm. had that. You know, so the world has
I saw a highlight of this one, just to get away from it. I saw a highlight, as it was in the 1930s, and Oregon in the late 30s won a national championship. They're tall. The reason why they won is because they had this one player. He was 6'8", but he was so much taller than everybody. Like, he was a giant at 6'8". Just think about this. At 6'8", he was a giant amongst men in college. That's how different it was back then, you know, compared to what it is now.
Well, it was like, remember when, you know, you watch old college, you know, footage of Bill Russell. They're like, what is this slam dunk? Should we try outlawing it? Mm-hmm. We don't get it because, you know, nobody, oh, he's 6'8". Well, then he's just, you know, the most dominant guy in the world now.
Yeah, outside of that, really, but I hate to really cliff notes it, but we have to. Between, like, the 40s when they had those Toronto teams in the BAA, and then all the way going into the end of the, going into the 1990s, there really was not much going on when it came to, you know, Canada and basketball. You know, the last time they had any success in the Olympics was in 2000 when they were in Sydney. They finished seventh place. If I had to name a couple of them offhand that were kind of like legends per se of Canadian basketball in the 70s, 80s, 90s, I think I could name them Leo Routens, whose son Andy played at Syracuse. You might remember him a little bit. There was Greg Francis, who played, I think he played for Fairfield in 1997. They almost beat North Carolina in the NCAA tournament. Jamal McGlure, who played at Kentucky. And then obviously, I'll stop there for a second because he came in before the NBA expanded in Canada with two NBA franchises, because they awarded those franchises in 1993, hence the Raptors name for the Toronto team, because the Jurassic Park was the in thing because the movie had come out that year. What were your memories when David Stern announced that they were going to give two franchises to Canada? Because this was also coming around the time that the NHL was expanding in the United States. So I never really understood the Canadian outreach. I didn't know if there was like a burgeoning popularity there. I know that they had the FIBA World Games in the Sky Dome in 1994. That was the second Dream Team. But outside of that, I mean, I don't really remember anything about Toronto being like this like popular land fan base for NBA basketball.
Well, first, for number one, you forgot your boy Todd McCullough.
Yeah, I did. You mean now pinball master Todd McCullough?
Yes. World famous pinball.
You saw that, huh?
But the thing, with Canada getting two franchises, it was, you could sort of, I don't want to say they were saturated here at the point. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to give Kansas City one? You're going to give, you know, this is before the Vegas issue sort of heated up. And, you know, there's really nowhere else to go. All right, let's give two places just right, you know, next door. Toronto had always, you know, Toronto's always enjoyed American, you know, American culture. There's tons of Buffalo Bills season ticket holders in Canada. And, you know, a lot of Vancouver fans were Seattle. Tons of Seahawk fans.
Yeah, well, Vancouver also, it's a pretty metropolitan city for that continent, because is it a country, continent? I'm terrible with my geography. What are we calling it today? A country?
Just the land up there.
Land up there. They hosted the Winter Games, I think, in 2010. So, I mean,
it was the Winter Games. Montreal had the 76 Olympics.
Yeah, that's true.
There are no strangers to it. It's just, you know, businessmen are coming in. All right. The main problem with that had sort of plagued hockey, and what led to the, you know, Gary Bettman taking all the hockey teams and moving them south, was just the dollar exchange rate was just killer. Mm-hmm. So you have to pay people in American currency, but the dollar here was like $1.50 there. So, mm-hmm. And then taxes are crazy. Taxes are still crazy, I heard, for American citizens. You know, American basketball players get taxed like twice as much, and yeah, it's just, well, you need a new fan base. All right, well, let's put two exploratory teams up there. Like, would you think, you know, when they moved, who were the finals for the Grizzlies? It was Louisville, not really an NBA city. Memphis, surprisingly, they haven't moved out.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're going, like, you know, hockey moved to Columbus and Nashville, and now you're just getting cities, like, really...
NHL's different because even like smaller franchises, like when they went back to Winnipeg, it's not that they have, like, you know, you have to think about the currency obviously between the American dollar and the Canadian dollar, and you have to also think about the loss in terms of market value. But Canadian fans attach themselves so dearly to franchises, even newly embedded ones, teams that haven't been around for a long time, that you know that you'll be able to get their dollar compared to, like, say, Phoenix, you know, where they've just struggled and struggled for so long there. I don't even know the Coyotes are still there.
They are still there, and people are still waiting for them to leave in, like, 2 years.
I mean, I hate to pick on certain teams. I'm just thinking of cities that I just don't consider hockey places, like the Nashville Predators or the Carolina Cougars. It wasn't the Cougars. It was the Carolina...
the Carolina Hurricane?
Yeah, like, places like that.
They're still there, but it's like, you know, think back, you know, to you and, you know, New Orleans. You have your minor league team, and to everybody, it's like, oh, this is a novelty.
Yeah.
And then you go to a game, and it's like, hey, this isn't half bad. Then you start getting into
it. Yeah, but the Vancouver Grizzlies were more than a novelty. They were an artifact. I mean...
The problem with the Vancouver Grizzlies, which we'll get into, you know, shortly, but this is the birth of now why we're having this conversation about good Canadian players.
Oh, you think so?
Well, let's parallel this to the Dream Team of 92. Europe had never seen, you know, people like Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Charles, they hadn't seen them up close. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they come in and destroy them. Then, oh, we want to be like them. And then all of a sudden, you know, 10, 15 years later, you're getting these NBA-ready prospects out of there, as opposed to just, he's 7 foot. He doesn't know how to do anything.
So you're saying in a way, even though the teams were awful in Toronto, because all expansion franchises, with the exception of a few, are usually god-awful from the start, and that made no exception with the Grizzlies and the Raptors. So are you kind of saying that those teams, by being awful but being in the city, they sort of paid for their sins because of the fact that they were awful?
Like, you're following them and you get invested into it. Like, look at the many of the years of the Aints. You're still watching the games as a kid, like, oh man, I want, you know, I wish I could do that. And you're still rooting for them, although they're bad. Because, you know, that addition, then all of a sudden you see opposing players coming.
Yeah, look at the Red Sox in Boston. I know they had the history of Babe Ruth, but they didn't win a World Series for 86 years. Who would get behind a team that hasn't won a championship in almost a century? You'd have to be crazy.
And
but
people here are extremely loyal
exactly.
to them. Same thing with Cubs fans. Like, well, why? You have a better team just literally a subway ride down. But you're still following along. All of a sudden, this new culture came in, and then in comes, well, I want to play this at school, and I want to play this, and, you know, let's just parallel this into the future a little bit more with America. And all of a sudden, the 94 soccer FIFA World Cup came here, but all of a sudden, more people, more kids, soccer just became more than, oh, well, my kid plays until he's 12, and then he finds real sports.
The Grizzlies, I'm just going to round out their record while I'm on the subject with them. First year, 95-96, that was the first year for both franchises, 15-67, then 1997, 14-68, yikes, 98-19-63, 98-99, which was lockout shortened season, they only won 8 games, 8-42, 99-2000, 22-60, and then 0-01, 23-59, so even though they were shipping out because they couldn't get an arena to replace that god-awful arena they had, the General Motors place. I mean, it was just a rut of an arena. It wasn't, to be honest, it wasn't even an arena. They were getting a little better at the end, and I think we saw that
but
when they got to
they?
Memphis.
The problem was they never got off the square footing because, A, the NBA rules really sort of did screw them by saying you can't get higher than a top five pick, mm-hmm. or... you know, for what was it, the first 3 years, you can't be above a 5.
Yeah, but they also
or...
picked Bryant Reeves with their first pick.
And then they made extremely bad picks, and then, you know, we'll draft Steve Francis. Oh, wait, even though he said he's not coming here. All right, so let's orchestrate a trade and get garbage in return.
And don't forget the Otis Thorpe trade, the infamous Otis Thorpe trade.
You know, they just made really bad general manager decisions, whereas Toronto, which you'll notice now, who was the first star in Toronto?
Oh, that would definitely be Vince Carter. Now, Damon Stoudemire, who was their kind of inaugural pick, because I believe the draft in 95, that was the one where Garnett was drafted, the draft was in Toronto. And I remember when they drafted Stoudemire, and people thought that he was going to be terrific, and he was the rookie of the year, but the team was awful. I mean, no doubt about it. That team was really, really bad. And Isaiah Thomas is the GM. He got fired eventually, and then they traded Stoudemire to the Blazers. And then in 98, they picked up Vince Carter, and it all changed.
Well, you got Vince Carter. You know, they were terrible with Stoudemire, but they had nobody around him. You know, you had Marcus Camby, and then Tracy McGrady was sort of the answer I was going for. And then Vince Carter.
He wasn't pushing the needle. You know, he was there, and you could see some...
He wasn't pushing it, but people got to watch, finally, somebody develop.
Okay.
And then I'm not going to say it's a direct parallel, but it went from sort of, well, Canada pushes out 7-foot, you know, big guys like everybody else, to the, all of a sudden now, we have, you know... 18 years later, we have the Anthony Bennett's, we have the Wigginses, we have Nick Stauskas. We're now getting guard play because we have guards they can watch, as opposed to just, well, it's a big man game. And Steve Nash,
that's the player I was holding off on before we could talk about, because he was drafted in 1996, which was at the end of the inaugural season for the Raptors and the Grizzlies. He was originally drafted by the Phoenix Suns, and then he was traded in this ginormous trade that involved the Dallas Mavericks in 1997. It also involved Michael Finley in some way, and that sort of helped rebuild the Mavericks.
Yeah, but that was just sort of more of a factoid, I would think. Like, oh, he's from Canada.
I don't agree. I felt like it was more than that with Steve Nash.
It's towards the end of his career, but in the beginning, this was, and it comes down to, where did he come from? Santa Clara, who were the only kid, you know, schools sort of recruiting up there. Oh, it was those tiny, you know, West Coast Conference schools. A lot of, you would see the New England schools, like, oh, the Vermonts and the Canisiuses and the Fairfield. Oh, they would get a player from there. But it wasn't, you didn't see a Kentucky heading up there. You didn't see everybody flocking over, you know, Kansas and...
Yeah.
You know, now they'll go to UNLV.
That's true.
So.
But Nash, when he was at Santa Clara, he did help put away Arizona in the NCAA tournament, which kind of put him on the map at first.
He put him on the map, but that's just, again, these small schools were the only ones going after. Now, the way the country has developed, you now have these big AAU programs. You have, they're all going to the Huntington Preps, the Finley Preps, the, you know, just like everybody else. And all of a sudden, oh, look, now... They're all over.
I mean,
we're talking about
a lot of rhetoricals here, but let's really make a decision here. If you had to choose between the Grizzlies and the Raptors being founded, Vince Carter's arrival, and then the MVP, the 2-year MVP stretch of Steve Nash, what had the greatest influence over Canadians and the popularity of the sport of basketball in Canada?
Well, it's obviously getting the teams would be the. By far the great. You could, even though Vancouver really squandered their attempts, and you know, fans even say like, yeah, we sort of blew it and we didn't get behind it. We'd like to have a team back. We know what to do. You know, say when Winnipeg lost their hockey team, you know, they were so happy to overpay to get the Atlanta franchise back. Like, we're not letting you go. We know what it's like now. We've seen it. And then the thing is with, you know, Canadian basketball players, you don't see many, by many I mean any, basketball players who come from Canadian schools.
Yeah, very, very rare. I was looking at the training camp roster that Team Canada's got coming up. There's only one that played in a Canadian college, and that was a guy named Aaron Dornikamp, who played for the in the Pan Am games that just passed, along with Jamal Murray and Andrew Nicholson. And he's a pretty good player, but he did not play in an American college or, you know.
And if I'm not mistaken, he's a little older. He's like 5 years older than everybody
else.
So.
There's a, the only other guy is a guy that played at the same school as Dornacamp, and that's a it's a very famous one in Ottawa called Carlton, the Carlton Ravens. They play under the OUA conference, which is the Ontario University Athletics Conference under CIS, which is like the Canadian version of the NCAA. And they have won. I'm not even making this up. They've won 11 of the last 13. Canadian collegiate championships in men's basketball. Their head coach is named Dave Smart, and he's an assistant coach for the Canadian national team under Jay Triano, who you might remember coached the Toronto Raptors as the head coach for a while, and now he's an assistant coach with the Blazers. Dave Smart is like the John Wooden of Canadian basketball. And basically two of his players, Dornacamp, and then the other one, his name is... they had two brothers who on the team last year, and one of them got invited, and his name is Phil Scrubb. But those are the only ones outside of the, all the rest. If you look at the rest of them, Anthony Bennett, Anthony Bennett went to UNLV. He's from Brampton, Ontario. Sim Bular is from, I really hope I say this right, Mississauga?
Mississauga,
Ontario. He played in New Mexico State. New Mexico State, under Marvin Menzies, they actually have tons of Canadian players, if you look at it.
They found the
yeah,
pipeline.
Yeah, it's like St. Mary's with the Australians. They just seem to find that pipeline, whatever.
That they have that comfort zone. Okay, we know, you know, you go to the school, treats them well. So that's
you
just,
gotta avoid the payouts, and if
reference.
You do pay out, you better hide it good. That's all I can say about that.
I doubt New Mexico State has really much to pay out other than, hey, do you guys like not snow? You know,
Melvin Angelo, I really like that Iowa State. He's from Toronto. Carl English is from Paradise, Newfoundland, which is really, like, rare. I didn't expect a guy from Newfoundland. Is it Newfoundland or Newfoundland?
Newfoundland.
See, I wouldn't have expected a guy from that far out of reaches to make it in basketball. But, you know, with the YouTubes of the world and everybody learning how to travel, with travel being easier, I guess it's easier for talents to be able to go way out there and train. The most recent draft pick with the Jazz, Olivier Hanlon, he's from Elmer, Quebec, Canada.
Quebec.
That's Boston College he played at.
That's just a quick, you know, quick 6 hour recruiting visit.
Brady Heslip, he's the sharpshooter from Baylor, from Burlington, Ontario. Corey Joseph, a teammate of Tristan Thompson, who's this year surprisingly not on the team. He decided to skip out so that he could do the contract negotiations and not risk injury.
Oh, quick side note: is he a max player?
No. Not even.
Is somebody going to pay him max money?
Not even by today's NBA standards is he a max player. Today's max area is 18 mil, right? I wouldn't even give him 18 mil with the new deals. I would give him more like 15 or 16. Something more in the vein of what Wes Matthews got, and Wes Matthews got overpaid. That's just my personal opinion. He's a great rebounder, great offensive rebounder. Defensively, he's solid. But scoring-wise, he's a black hole. And he can't shoot free throws.
That's what I was going to say. He doesn't really seem to do much. Okay, back to your topic.
I guess Thompson may have gotten... maybe you can talk about this one easier, because this happens in the United States so often with NBA stars and their agents. I got to think he may have gotten told by an agent, maybe you should sit out this camp so that you can do your negotiating and not risk injury.
Oh, that's exactly what I told him. It's just like, do you see Dante Exum? You want that to happen to you? Any minor injury will cost you, you know, just tens of millions of dollars down the road. You are to sit back and not move from a beach chair. You are to, you know, if you need something, we will deliver it to you. You do not take a step anywhere.
I just watched this documentary on that was on an episode of a show, a popular news show. It's like an investigative show on the CBC. It's called The Fifth Estate. And in 2012, they did an investigative report on AAU basketball in Canada. and they talked about the history of it. Now, the most popular one is one that wasn't discussed in the episode, and it's called CIA Bounce, which actually was a merger of two different AAU schools, or not schools, AAU teams. One was called Christians in Action, hence CIA, and the other one was called the Bounce. They had two guys together on it. I'm trying to remember the name. One of them, his last name was McIntyre. His two sons were Dylan and Tyler Ennis, you know, and he had coached them all the way up to the AAU circuit until they got college scholarships at, you know, Tyler went to Syracuse, obviously, and Dylan wound up at Villanova, but he's since transferred. But CIA Bounce is the most popular one, but that wasn't the one they talked about. They talked about a guy who was like the godfather of AAU basketball in Canada and kind of shuffling them into the United States, and it was a guy named Roe Russell. He's of Canadian descent and he has Jamaican descent, and he had been around since like the mid to late 90s, kind of bringing in, kind of doing what, you know, he was basically the World Wide West of Canada, you know, but even dirtier, because he was like hands-on with the payments and with the coaching, whereas William Wesley wasn't really a coach per se. Am I right?
No.
He was more of a handler, you know. But Roe coached the teams, you know, in Canada, and he would try to get But what he was doing is that he would shuffle a lot of these players, like Tristan Thompson and Corey Joseph, who played under him. And another recent one was Xavier Rathan Mays, who now plays at Florida State. Supposedly they had Roe Russell kind of would advise his players to go to Texas under Rick Barnes. And that was one of the players that's under the, on the Team Canada this year. And that's Corey Joseph. You're not a fan of Corey Joseph though.
But the one thing I was going to say about him is he might be, we had talked last week about sneaky deals and whatnot.
Now that there's nobody,
you know, he could really create his own minutes.
But it was also a hometown type of deal.
It's not a hometown type of deal if you're paying.
I don't mean like a discount. I mean it was a hometown type of. It was a preference for Corey personally. Whereas, well, okay, the Spurs let you go to be an unrestricted free agent because they didn't have the money anymore because of Aldridge and Danny Green and Kawhi. So now that you have the options, where do you want to go? Well, he says, oh well, I'll just go back home. I could play for a good team, and I probably could get starter minutes now that Gravis Vasquez got traded. So it kind of made sense.
Yeah, it did, and like I said, it could be one of those deals where you overpaid him, but you could play into that contract. It could become a bargain really soon. So, you know, but like I said, you're more higher
and
on
let me,
him.
And,
but yeah, you're just to get to your point. Yeah, they were just funneling just to Texas.
Yeah, well, to Texas and just a few other kind of main schools, that any school that would basically give them the offer, because you know the problem is, you know, we talked about Carleton College in Ottawa, which is like a major Canadian, you know, men's basketball like legacy. And there are tons of schools out there in Canada. It's not like there's like five or six per province. I looked at all the names of them in the conferences. There are tons. But the problem is, wherever the good ones are, if you really want to get noticed by NBA scouts and pro scouts, and everybody knows the dream is to go to the NBA, you have to play it in an American college.
Well, that's what it seems like. I remember doing, you know, South Dakota games, and, oh, if there's two Canadians on that roster, and, you know, there's even Division II, oh, he's Canadian, too. It's like, oh, they all just come down here. It just seems like, well, okay, you're, you know, the only real person is a Keen Hicks, who played a different sport.
CFL. Like, CFL's been around. That's a whole different pipeline because the CFL's been around for so long, you know.
Yeah, but the thing is now, like we said with Toronto, if you buy an AAU, you have to buy a district. You can't just be like, oh, I want one team. It's like you need to buy like a franchise and be the center. And you know, now that Toronto had set up, all right, well, my kid wants to play, so it's my kid. Now, all of a sudden, you now have 10, 20, 30 teams. Vancouver, yeah, it might have started a little bit. Then all of a sudden, the team left, oh, well, you know, we're back to something
else. To finish up on the training camp roster, Jamal Murray, who we talked a little bit about at the end of the last episode, from Kitchener, Ontario. He's going to be playing at the University of Kentucky. This dude is unbelievable. He was by far the best player on the Pan Am games for the Canadian squad, and that was a team that had Andrew Nicholson and Anthony Bennett. He was better than both of them. Okay, Nicholson, who I just talked about, he's from Mississauga. I said it right this time, huh? Yeah. Mississauga?
Yeah.
It's like Mississippi.
Yeah, it's just a suburb of Toronto.
Okay.
Yes.
Nicholson, he's one of the only ones there with the Magic still from the post-Dwight era, you know, when they had, like, Mo Harkless and Kyle O'Quinn and, Vucevic is still there. Tobias Harris they got from a trade. But Nicholson's got, I think he's got one more year there in Orlando. We'll see what he can do.
Yeah, he got mysteriously buried. It was like he doesn't have a high ceiling, but he'll give you solid rebounding minutes, and he could, you know, rest your big guys. He's not really a defensive liability, and he's not a hole in on offense. So I don't really, you know, like we've mentioned the clusterfuck that is the Orlando Magic, and
I think it's going to clean up a little bit under Scott Skiles. I think he's going to have a system there, which is unlike what Jock had. So it's going
to. You have a system, but they need to get rid of some players. Though.
They also have the 7 foot, the 2-man 7 foot front court out of Gonzaga, both from British Columbia, interestingly enough, from different areas. From Kamloops, your boy Kelly Olynyk, who played for the Gonzagas, the Zags, the Bulldogs, and he's with the Boston Celtics. I think we talked about Kelly Olynyk enough, right?
Yeah, we've done enough, but Gonzaga's another school that taps.
Who's the other Gonzaga guy? Can you name him?
He
played on the Gonzaga team that got eliminated by Sullinger and Ohio State. That was his senior year. He plays for the Lakers now.
Robert Sacre,
a 7-footer, which shocks me because every time I watch him play, he looks like he's 6'5". And then Dwight Powell, who was with the Celtics, then got traded to the Mavericks in the Rondo deal. And now, interestingly, he might accidentally get minutes because of the DeAndre Jordan fiasco, huh?
Yeah, he was one of those players, you know, smart, you know, high IQ players that everybody seems to like and will stick around at the end
of
the bench.
Yeah, he's from Toronto. We talked a little bit about Phil Scrubb, who just recently came off of a stint in Carlton under Coach Dave Smart. He's also just signed a deal with AEK Athens in Greece. He's from Richmond, British Columbia. Nick Stauskas, who also actually has two passports. He's got a Canadian one, and he's got one for Lithuania, but he will be playing for Canada. He's from Mississauga as well. He just recently got traded to the Philadelphia 76ers. I think the Kings gave up on him a little too early. Would you agree there?
The Kings pulled the classic Houston Rockets and said, we need to clear out all our space for the guys that are coming in. Oh, they didn't come in.
Yeah, but for the Rockets, they save face in the regular season by getting a couple of, like, really nice deals.
Well, they did, but we also mentioned the Kings, and they had some solid additions. But, you know, the thing we said about Sauce was he's the same player, just different color than Ben McLemore. You don't need two players who are the same game, the exact same game, playing the same position. You know, like, that just makes – that was just a bad drafting move on their part.
The one we didn't mention that was also at Gonzaga is Kyle Wilcher, and that's because he's a senior. Mike Kabongo, who we talked about, he played very well in that really weird tournament. They had the basketball tournament. He was sort of the best player there. Ken Birch, he originally was at Pitt. Then he transferred to UNLV, and now he's kind of bouncing around on training camp rosters and D-League rosters. Trey Lyles, who just committed, who just got drafted by the Utah Jazz. He played at Kentucky for a year, and I mentioned Xavier Rathan-Mays. You know what Xavier Rathan? I don't know if you saw this, but you remember him? He scored 30 points in 4.5 minutes in the last 4.5 minutes of a game against
Florida State. Good.
That's another one that I think was getting a little bit of the pipeline from Roe Russell because, you know, Xavier Rathan-Mays committed there. And also a guy who had some associations with him was the guy that I think was also, along with Nash and Vince Carter, one of the real big, like, movers and shakers when it came to Canadian basketball, and that is Andrew Wiggins out of Vaughan, Ontario. Even though Mitchell is American, his mother is Canadian. And that's where they were residing. He eventually went down to Huntington, West Virginia to play to finish out his high school career before he committed to the University of Kansas. Now he's playing for the Minnesota Timberwolves. I mean, I know he's only a rookie. I don't think he's going to be like the best player ever, but I think Andrew Wiggins is the most influential player of them all.
He thus far,
even more than
the
Steve Nash. I gotta tell you.
Well, because Steve Nash also came really. He was sort of ahead of his time.
He's from South Africa. His father was English, and his mother was Welsh. Which I mean, it's also kind of in the same way as Wiggins. I mean. You know, I mean, obviously Steve Nash. At the end of the day, you know, he's not African American. But to have an African American, really talented Canadian player, you know, out of the Ontario area where the minority has risen to 25%, I think that it feels like that's kind of our guy. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, places like Toronto and that's just like a complete melting pot area where they all go, and that's a place like everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody, yes, close down the borders. The area is just ripe for picking, and you know the it's urban, but it's suburban, and it's not. You know, the crime rates are extremely low, and yes, Wiggins is the first.
I think what LeBron type
exactly. High school.
I'm gonna clarify. I think he will eventually become the most influential of the Canadian players because of what he will be able to do in the future. I'm not saying he's going to have a better career than Steve Nash. I think Steve Nash was unreal. But with Andrew, and I'm not saying this because of his first name, but I just think it's because I think he'll be able to accomplish more, and the Canadians are going to be along for the ride with him, and also the international success that he's going to bring. Steve Nash is the general manager of team of Canada basketball, so he might take some credit there if they wind up having more success in the future years. But when he was a player, they never did well with Nash, you know, and it wasn't necessarily his fault. It's because the Canadian crop was just not very good.
Exactly. And it was just, it was Nash and a bunch of 7 foot
and yeah, Leo Routens. Yeah.
You know, look at, they don't, like, the Canadian Basketball League has, like, you know, 8 teams and it's all players, like, you know, it seems more like a rec league or a semi-pro,
Joel Anthony.
It's just, you know, like, you'll get players just like anywhere else. It's just like, how did, you know, Carlos Boozer and Trajan Lang, they came from Alaska, and, you know, Carl English came from Hawaii or something.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have players literally come from all over the same way, like, you know, like Nova Scotia, where did he come from? Like, yeah, every once in a while you'll find one from.
Yeah,
all over.
Nash is one of those because, you know, I was talking about his birth, you know, his roots from his parents, and then, you know, he was an avid soccer fan, but then, you know, he decided to try basketball instead, and, you know, then he goes to a school in California, of all places, a small college, you know. So he's kind of like the rare breed, whereas I think Wiggins is like the first of many, if that makes any sense.
He is a product of the American system.
Yes, thank you.
AAUs, Finley Prep, Huntington Prep. Oh, yeah, okay, so he played with O.J. Mayo when he went against J.R. Smiths, and, you know, he's playing against American AAU people, and, you know, the first pipeline, the same thing Anthony Bennett and the Kabongos.
Yeah, and he reclassified. You know, he was not in the Parker... I'm trying to remember who the other guy was that was... Oh, Julius Randle. He wasn't in that class at first. He reclassified after his junior season in high school and said, okay, I'm gonna reclassify so I can be eligible for 2013 instead of 2014. And then he immediately became number one ahead of Parker. You know, and that's when we had that year where we were tracking down all the freshmen. And, you know, that included Wiggins, Parker, Randle, Aaron Gordon at Arizona, and then Tyler Ennis, because Syracuse went undefeated for so long, another Canadian. I'm surprised a little bit that Ennis didn't make the training camp roster. Were you?
No, because, you know, there's many cases where he could have turned it down. He could have just said,
there's no way he turned it down.
Team,
there's no way.
could have just been not invited, or there's men there. You could turn it down if your manager says and your team's like, we don't think really you should play here. Now us, the Milwaukee Bucks, are like, we think you should sit tight. Okay, I think I will, because I don't want to jeopardize my $2 million
I hate to try to kind of pack them together, but there are times where you watch a certain nationality and watch their national team, and players play a certain style. I've always felt that way about Argentina, you know, the Argentinian players. Like, they seem to play a very, very specific style with the Euro step, and they like to, you know, the way that they shoot off, they like to step back and shoot. I feel like Lithuanians play very similar, you know.
Lithuania puts 5'6'9".
But that's what I'm saying. They all play the same. You know, even Valanciunas
Brazil's
kind of similar to, like, say, remember Darius Sungaila? He reminds me of him, you know? But what about Canada? Like, I don't feel like there's, like, one style. Like, oh, they shoot well.
They don't have a style because they don't have an identity. There's been no, until this, these, you know, Pan-American games and the, this go-around, there's been no general interest for the team. Because they knew they had these young players, but they're like, okay, they're too young. Oh, hey, Steve Nash, please play with us in 2008. Come on, please. And he's like, you're who with who? You know, Jamal McGlory? Why? I don't want to play with him.
Why waste time if we know we're not going to qualify, you know?
Exactly. And this is the time where you finally have the basketball pride of, okay, we might be able to start getting a team, as opposed to just, well, we have one guy in the NBA and a couple overseas, but for the most part, you know, they don't do anything. And, you know, you have this high school kid in Cousin Jamal going to Kentucky. You know, it's just like, all right, he's beating out NBA players and working against, you know, Bennett.
Yeah,
that's a good sign for
now.
Your
the
future.
Big hype was not just Wiggins going number one. It was the fact that, well, there was a couple of things. First of all, Thompson and Joseph, you know, both from Texas, also got bounced in the second round of the tournament thanks to Rick Barnes being an idiot. They both got drafted in the first round, so that was a big coup for, you know, Canadian basketball and Roe Russell. And before everything fell to shit after the Fifth Estate kind of exploited his, you know, the way he was getting paid out. And then in 2013. Anthony Bennett got drafted number one. Now, whether or not he was the number one pick, I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. But still, a Canadian player going number one, and then another one in 2014 with Wiggins, who I don't think anybody is going to argue about that one. So back-to-back number one overall picks, regardless of what you thought of the players, number one is number one. It never goes away. So do you think that was kind of a big, like, alarm to people of, like, okay, Canada is starting to arrive in the NBA, not necessarily college?
The tides are starting to turn, and, you know, it's these, like we said, the perfect time. Toronto is celebrating their 21st year. All right, now kids are being born with having basketball in their lives and having, you know, probably their parents glued to the TV watching, you know, the Raptors.
Well, you know, what's funny, because I was looking at interviews of the rookie photo shoot that they had, and do you know what they all said? Who do you want to play with? Who do you idolize? All of them said Kobe Bryant. All of them. And I got to think that Kobe, maybe Shaq, and Kevin Garnett were probably big ones for some. Because, you know, you do make a point about the Raptors and the Grizzlies, because if you look at the age level, it's about at that age in 1990. It means they were all born around 1995 to 1996. This is about that age where kids were like 2 years old, 3 years old when Vince Carter came around and started kind of like wow people and, you know, have success. So I think there is definitely a correlation there of when you get into the NBA, who do you want to play? Well, you want to play against your idols. And for them, Kobe, Vince Carter, and Kevin Garnett, as old as it makes us feel, those are their idols.
Exactly.
LeBron James is an idol. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. He's getting there. A couple years away now. You're gonna have kids saying that. Oh yeah, I used to watch him in grade school.
It's crazy. We're getting in that rare form where like Michael in the late '90s, where it's like, man, you were my idol in school, but he's still the best player. You know, LeBron's getting there. You know, we're gonna get to a point where a kid who was probably 8 years old, maybe 7 years old, watching LeBron James and St. Vincent St. Mary's, he's gonna be an elite player. And he's gonna be playing against LeBron, and LeBron is still better than him. You know?
Yep, and just to, sort of bring this back full circle, you can relate to this Canadian expansion phenomenon. You know, when you didn't have the New Orleans franchise, whatever their name was, it's a lot different watching, all right, TNT on Thursday. Then you have your local games every, third day, every other day. You get to see 80-some-odd games as opposed to just seeing, one or two every week.
You get, a slice of everything. And in Toronto, that was probably a big deal for them. And the funny part is, when the Bulls would go, I always talk about the Bulls in the late 90s because, let's be honest, they were the standard bearer. They were the team that was winning 60 to 70 games. When they would go up to Canada and play the Grizzlies and the Raptors, they had problems. I think they had problems with motivation. I think they would go up there and they would have a good time and they would say, oh, we got to play a basketball game, and they wouldn't be ready. And the Raptors would always be ready to play because everybody would take them for granted. You know, Shaq did an interview and he said, the teams I hated to play against weren't the really good ones. It was the awful ones, because when you came into town, you were always their most important game of the season. So you always had to be ready. You know, and
it was the most important game. And then also people didn't like playing in Toronto because they have a vibrant nightlife. So they'd all go out clubbing, and then, they'd come back to, I used to go to, I've probably been to like four or five Raptors games. And I think three or four of them were like 1:30 games. They were just early games. It's just like, oh, this is, and it's like, oh, the Celtics or whoever, they look like shit because they just, they're busy out partying, and the Raptors came to play, and the fans are into it, and that's pretty much the whole thing. Is Vancouver didn't embrace the team while they were bad, whereas the Ontario fans really got into it.
What about We the North? I mean, do you think that's just a really snazzy campaign to just kind of rope in a few fans?
Just a marketing campaign.
Nothing influential. Nothing that's kind of going to have an impact down the road.
Nothing more, nothing less, because they'll change it in a few years again.
Now, the Raptors have been good for more than 1 year in a row for the first time in a long time. So do you think that has had some sort of an impact on, people going to Canada? Because now when you go to Toronto to play the Raptors, you have to be ready to play,
You have to be ready to play, and it's just, they Toronto had to figure out their thing, because what had they been doing is like, well, Toronto has a European feel. You get a lot of, European people go there. So let's try to get all the Euro players. Let's get, Turkoglu, and let's get people who feel more at home up here. And then once they just said, let's just get players, and let's get a system. Let's get something going. But, no, you go to Toronto, you see people wearing Raptors shirts more than, I guess you could say it's sort of the state of the franchise, but the Toronto Maple Leafs have been god awful.
Yeah, I don't follow NHL that closely.
I know you don't follow hockey, but there was a point, in the 2000s where the fans were revolting against management just for making stupid trades and getting rid of good people, and the team was just horribly bad.
Yeah, the only guy I remember, like, I mean, this is how old I am. All I remember about them is the Cujo days, Curtis Joseph. That's the last person I remember for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's fair enough. I'm saying, you have one bad sport, people are like, all right, let's go check out this. Hey, this team's a little more exciting. This team's winning. This team's actually, doing things. So it takes a couple factors, but the Raptors are firmly ingrained in the Toronto DNA now.
Let's try for an all-Canadian, all-time team. Now, listen, I'm going to give you the ones that have already kind of passed their time, just to see if they would make it. Rick Fox at small forward, would you take him over Wiggins? Or maybe put him next to Wiggins?
Rick Fox?
From Lakers and the Celtics.
for and acting.
No, playing basketball. Rick Fox was not that bad of a player, man.
He wasn't.
He was solid defensively, and he could shoot threes. And he had beautiful hair.
Like, he would be on the roster, I would assume.
Well, no, we're going.
Would he be a starting?
We gotta go start five here.
Well, you're already putting Wiggins
yes.
in there.
After 1 year, I would still put Wiggins just because of the athleticism. I think he's done enough to prove it compared to the rest.
All right, we could put Rick Fox.
Steve Nash, in. Obviously a point guard, eh?
We could put Steve Nash in. I guess.
What about Jamal McGlure at center? Would you put him over, say? I'm trying to think of some of the other kind of good Canadian players, but I can't really think of any at the center spot.
I think I'm correct, but I could be horribly, horribly wrong. Bill Wennington
over Jamal McGlure?
McGlure had one good
season. But he
went
to the All-Star team.
Bill
Wennington is from Canada. He's from Montreal.
Okay, there we go.
But he went to high school in Brookville, New York. Long Island Lutheran.
Well, he's still Canadian.
Man,
I'll take it.
Bill Wennington made two jump shots for the Bulls. He made the one that when Michael scored 55, and then he had the dump-off dunk, you know, against the Knicks in the playoffs the next year. That's all I remember about Bill Wennington.
Three championships, don't I?
Okay, so Wennington over McGlure.
Okay, fine.
No, you win.
Wennington
over McGlure.
Tristan Thompson?
this is funner than I thought. Nicholson. Probably Tom. I'd have to take Thompson.
Oh, Thompson over Nicholson, hands down.
Joel Anthony, any chance?
No, he never had any.
I didn't even like him in college. I remember him under Lon Kruger, and I remember thinking, this guy can't play. Tristan Thompson, I guess. I'm surprised that he thought his shit didn't stink and he skipped out. Leo Routens, as a shooter, he played in EuroLeague for a very long time. Probably the best shooter outside. It's either him or Brady Hesel were the best shooters.
I'd give it to Routens over.
His son Andy was good, but not. I mean, I watched him in Syracuse. He was good, but he wasn't great. Now Jamal Murray, I mean, if I had a chance to take two guards, we did this like 3 years, 5 years later, I might think of Jamal Murray. Like, I think he's that good. I mean, Kentucky fans are going to be pleasantly surprised at how good he is. I think he might wind up just being the starting point guard, and Tyler Ulis winds up being a backup again. That's the sound of you being running into it.
No, it's just me, like, yes. I'm trying to create an argument against it.
So, our starting lineup here, Steve Nash, Leo Routens, Andrew Wiggins, Tristan Thompson, and Bill Wennington. And then I forgot Todd McCullough, if you want to throw him in there.
No, we got McGlure.
No, our boy. Todd McCullough. I'm saying Jamal McGlure. I was just sort of giving him a hard time.
Played in two NBA finals in a row, McCullough did, with the Sixers and the Nets. I remember he got that deal with the Nets because he played defense on Shaq in the finals with the Sixers. It was that era where everyone made money based on what they could do against Shaq. That was all it was.
If you're just big, you could take the foul and you could do literally.
Yeah, remember
anything,
when the Blazers traded away like three good players to get Sean Kemp? Because he was just a big body. And it was like, okay, yeah, but he's a big body, but Shaq's just gonna dunk right over him. You know, and that's exactly what Shaq did.
That was a different time back then. These are all tales of legends for these young kids now.
What do you think's going to happen at the end of August in Mexico with the FIBA Americas? Do you see them making the pool, the Olympic pool?
I honestly do not know the teams that are in it, but I would assume.
If you stall long enough, I'll tell you.
No, if Brazil is in it, though, Brazil.
I know Brazil's in it, but they're not in their block. So
Argentina has been really off. I haven't seen anything impressive by them.
I think they're done. I think they're completely done. To be honest with you. You know.
It just seems like they've just gotten like their players have just gotten all small, and all they could do is just put out like.
Are you excited at all for EuroBasket?
EuroBasket.
I don't know where it is this year, but I know it's coming. I know Dirk's playing. Shockingly, I was very surprised. Yes.
Is it in France this year?
Let me see. It is going to be.
Because last year was in Slovenia.
It's in four different countries. Oh yeah. It's in France, Croatia, Germany, and Latvia. Five host venues though.
Latvia.
Oh my god.
Latvia.
I'm trying to think where the finals are. There's got to be a final, like a final area.
I think finals are.
Well, France won EuroBasket surprisingly in the last one, and then they beat Spain. Again, in the FIBA World Cup in the quarterfinals, which shocked everybody. So we'll see there. But, yes, I know I was told that Nowitzki is going to play. So
Dirk has nothing to lose. He's, you know, he's just playing because he loves
And Spain, know, I've got to think that. Spain's going to have quite a few good players there because they're going to have revenge on their mind after the loss to France.
They are good players, but, you know, the amount of the problem with Spain is it's this – same players that has been. You don't see new Spanish players coming up. It's always, you know,
that's
the
true.
Same.
Like with Slovenia and Serbia and we just talked about Canada and Lithuania. You can see the good players coming. You know, under 19 level, you can see it. You know.
Yeah, they're coming, but it's just like, well, where are all these Spain kids coming? And it's just like, oh, well, it's Sergio Llull. It's the same people we've been hearing from them. It's not like, you know, Turkey had the lull. Now they're slowly coming back. They're the Turkish under-18 team is, you know, they
I
have some players
after watching
coming in.
U19, I think the one to watch is Serbia. I think Serbia's got tons of really nice players coming in. And also Greece. I think Greece is kind of making a comeback. Because they were god-awful after they made the Olympics in 08 because they finished in the finals of the 06 one. That was the infamous game where they beat the United States because they hit like a million threes in Japan. But then, ever since the 08 games, they have been awful, awful. But it seems like they're starting to pick up a few more pro-ready players from the area of Greece, so I think that one might come back.
Yeah, it's just like now the Greeks are cheering for Epicuno.
Well,
I was like, okay, he's Greek.
But no, here's your groups. Sure. Here's your groups for FIBA Americas. Group A is Mexico, Panama, the Dominican Republic, who's coached by Rick Pitino,
and then has no players.
Brazil and Uruguay, and then in Group B you have Canada, Cuba, Puerto Rico, Argentina, and Venezuela. So I think they have a chance, but they gotta have to finish first in their grouping to get a good seed, and then they're gonna have to reach the finals, where I'm almost sure they're gonna play either Brazil or the Dominican Republic.
So. Yeah, Puerto Rico's sort of fallen off the map.
Oh, for sure.
Well.
I remember the years when they had Carlos Arroyo, and they were tough. That was a tough little team.
They've always had tough guards. Now it's just like, well, even they've sort of jumped ship.
But you said there's really no identity with Canada as a team in terms of style.
No, because they never had one.
What do you envision,
always,
though? Like, what do you see here?
With this team, still no identity. It's now the next group, the 2020 Olympics and the 2018 Pan Am Games, when you have, you know, the addition to, with you know, like Murray, and I don't know if he'll be anything, but, you know, Thon Maker.
You mentioned Thon Maker, from who's got also Haitian descent.
Haitian? Oh boy. When we get to the
international rights episode, this is going to be great. I'm just going to hand it off to you. But who knows? Olenek might be a good player. Nicholson might turn a corner in 3 or 4 years. I mean, remember in Argentina when they won the gold medal in the Olympics, one of their best players was a guy named Pepe Sanchez who played at Temple.
Pepe Sanchez
like,
was great.
He was a really good compliment, but he wasn't an NBA player. You know, but he was good for what they did. That's why I'm...
Because he didn't fit the NBA because he was but just a pass for...
But Adam, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think there's going to be guys like Melvin Ejim and, you know, Heslip as a shooter who are going to find their way, you know, with this team when they get enough international experience together.
Well, that's the thing is they didn't have this. All they have is just AAU experience and under-19 experience where you're playing, you know, well, I need to maintain my, you know, college eligibility. Well, I'm going against this Turkish kid who's been in the pro leagues for 2 years already because they don't give a shit about high school or college. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's now you're going to get, you know, they're right on the cusp of getting people like the Wiggins who want to be as opposed to, I guess I'll play.
Is Thompson's absence that big of a loss to where they might not even win FIBA Americas?
Well, that's the thing is, no, because... The fact that they have two NBA players already puts them ahead of the entire field. I wouldn't even guess to say there's two current NBA players in the rest of the tournament. There's no interest for qualifying. That's just why, you know, you're going to go play for this? Like, someone like, oh, yeah, because I love it. I love my country. There's like, no, because it doesn't matter. Oh, it's EuroLeague. Okay, whatever. It's an off year. Once you get to the Olympics, all right, now you're going to start hearing all the people want to play.
I wouldn't say next year in Rio de Janeiro by that point, but say by 2020, do you think Canada, or even the FIBA World Cup in 2018, do you think that that Canada will be able to field a team that can competitively play against or beat the United States in a game?
No. Yes and no. No because no.
No because no.
The amount of people you're getting from Canada is like if you put Canada against a time zone of the U.S. Okay, maybe you know they might beat them out. All the kids from the mountain school in the mountain time zone. You know they'll have a tough time with the Chicago kids, New York kids. You know, but if the NBA has their way and bans all their players from international competition. Then yeah, you're relying on college kids, and you know they really have nothing to lose. So it'll be back to just you know be shitty basketball. But
I think Wiggins could still be that guy where in about 4 years it's going to be like okay, how do we stop him? Like I think
but for international basketball, it's like okay, here's Wiggins. All right,
it worked for Durant in 2010. When he was the best player. And listen, they had other good players like Russell Westbrook and Derrick Rose and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, they had those players on the team. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, well, who was Wiggins going to pass to? Todd McCullough?
Who's the last? Oh, they'll have better players than that. I mean, if I'm Andrew Wiggins
yeah,
and
they
I
have
get,
better players than that
and I
by
got
default,
Nick
Stauskas and
Steve Heslop open for threes, that's not bad.
You're getting people, but again, there's still... Once you start, you know, you look at any sort of international roster, the more high-ranking teams you see is better than, like, okay, well, let's see who, I don't know, the Italian team. That's a bad example, but, you know, the Italian team, whatever. Oh, well, there's a lot of low-level Italian club players.
Canada is a big market, but I don't think the market, I don't think they're trying to reach out to get, I don't think they're trying so hard anymore like they were in the 90s to try to get the market share out of Canada. I feel like they're...
Because they had to fight to get it, first of all. It's like, well, they've seen, you know, they watched... You know, in their inception, they watched the demise of the Montreal Expos and just
that's true.
Indifference. And they're like, oh, you know, two started, one failed immediately. And, you know, in the end, you're always going to be an afterthought to hockey and curling. So... You have your niche market, you know, just go to whom you know. Don't try to, you know, it's like when the hockey lockout happened. You know, they canceled the whole season. Everyone, hockey's doomed. The next season, it came back to the exact same numbers because those who are watching
ESPN said it was doomed because they didn't have a hockey contract anymore. So when you don't have a TV contract,
because they lost it, but you know, those who watch it are going to watch. They didn't get any new fans. You don't want to see, you know, new, like, oh, well, I just found hockey, I'm giving it a shot. No, those who watched it, watching basketball need to start that, you know, we watch basketball, we're going to do it, because we don't have, you know, they don't have the college system. Like, I was up in Winnipeg for the NCAA tournament, and I think it was Syracuse and Michigan were playing. Bars entirely packed, people are watching every shot, and you know, just, you know, same thing. I was in Toronto for, I think it was Bills.
Does it
and
feel
Titans.
Like basketball oh, yeah. is popular in that area? Now, that's that's Quebec. You know, it's not Ontario, which is where really the hotbed is going on. You know, that's where the basketball hotbed is. But in Montreal, does it feel like basketball is rising in popularity?
Not so much. It's just, you know, it's going to be a hockey town through and through. But it's just people, like, those who don't have, like, you know, again, your pre-Pelicans days, all right, I like this guy in college, all right, he now plays for Seattle. I'll be a Sonics fan. You know, I don't have a team around me, so I'll just follow players I like. Because that's the only thing that's on is, you know, if we get the, you know, they don't have ESPN, they have TSN. Same thing. They all show ESPN games anyways, have the same graphics packages and whatnot. You know, so it's just, well, whatever the national game is, all right, that's what I'm forced to watch.
Well, that's what they had
so
Hockey Night in Canada, you know. You just watch.
Yeah, Hockey Night Canada is on CBC.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You would pick one game back then, back in the day.
Yeah, same thing. And if, look at the older generation, there, you know, like our parents. Tons of... You know, who are you? I'm a Raiders fan. I'm a Steelers fan. I'm a Cowboys fan. It's just a handful of teams. It's all they would show back in the 70s was that
yeah, NBA
one game.
Was like that on ABC. It was on CBS.
Yeah, so
game.
You just had those. You had those. You know, that's the same thing up there. Is all right. Well, TSN showing Oklahoma City. Okay, let's go Durant. The same thing. Like if you don't have vested interest in either team, well, okay, I just want to see some good basketball and see some good players. So, is it developing as a culture, you know, yeah, because you have AAU programs. As long as you have AAU programs, you have kids
yes.
playing it. Yeah, of course,
yeah,
it's CIA
balance
it's just,
going anywhere. That'll be around.
You know, I'm not gonna. I don't think the CIS is gonna replace the NCAA or the. I can't even think of the other one.
The other Canadian one that they have.
No, the other US, the NCAA alternative.
There's the NAIA.
Yeah, the NAIA. You're not going to replace the NAIA on talent level 2 because, again, all the kids want to. But the same thing, if you're a good hockey player, where do you, you know, let's just say you're like an all-star hockey wonder kid. Where are you going to practice? You're going to be on the, you know, your local ice up there and be like, well, you know what, I'm going to go, yeah. I want to go start training
yeah,
in Canada.
And not only that, like, the rules are different between the NCAA and the CIS, like, in hockey, just to kind of get away before we wrap things up. I was reading it up, and in CIS – You can try out for the Canadian junior team, but you know in the CHL, but you can't suit up, you can't play, but you can play certain, you can practice certain amount of like minutes or days or whatnot. Whereas if you do that and you're immediately ineligible for an NCAA scholarship, which I think is beyond stupid. But you know, it just shows how the rules are different in terms of amateur status and how it's defined between the CIS, which is Canada's you know governing body for you know collegiate sports for degree granting universities, and then the NCAA in the United States. You know, it's the NCAA being behind the times is not a big shock, but the problem is if you want to go to the NBA, you usually have to go to an NCAA school in order to get noticed. It's very very hard to be an elite Canadian player and play strictly in Canada. That's the tough part.
And even then, they're going to go to small schools because you never know. Look, you have just, you know, Calvin Payton, Murray State, and then your boy Alfred Payton, Louisiana, Lafayette.
You know, it's easier now at small schools. Here's the thing about mid-major schools in the United States in the NCAA. They really don't know how good they really have it because you have the NCAA Division I membership. Okay, so you get the payouts from your conference regardless of how much money your conference makes. You're still making decent revenue, okay? And even and for the players there who say that they want to move on, you can transfer as a postgraduate and still play one more year in a major college if you can get around it. And if you're good enough, if you really are good enough, you'll probably still get drafted anyway playing for a small school and never having to leave. So I just think that people don't realize how good that they have it at these American colleges, whereas in Canada, you could be at the most famous Canadian college in the country and and be the best player, and you still might not get consideration because nobody watches you.
Well, if you were so good, why didn't you go out there? And how come you're still playing in Canada? And how come you're not dominating EuroLeague?
And today, in the YouTube era, in today's age with digital media, everybody watches everybody. So if you're really good, even if you play for a Louisiana Lafayette or a Murray State or Lehigh, they're going to watch you. They're going to see you. And if you're in the NCAA tournament...
Yeah, you'll still be the SportsCenter top pick clip of the night if you do something
insane.
And
the NCAA tournament has 68 schools. So if you're good enough, you're going to make it anyway. You know? So... But yeah, that's going to be wrapping up this one. I think we enjoyed this one. I think you're kind of looking forward to the next one where we're going to be talking about... we're going to stay international, but it's going to be a little bit of a different taste, right?
We'll be more NBA focused with the next one, but yeah, let's still stay overseas.
Yeah,
for a little
I think
bit.
You're enjoying overseas anyway with all the flying around that you do. It's almost like you're not even American.
I will be. Yeah, all because you never rode a subway or don't like flying and enjoy your little castle walls of your little
my shack
town.
My shack
That's
here
cool.
in Covington.
You know, it's cool. There's a world out there. Yeah. Right?
No, you can have your world. I'll have my little hut here. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Gray Show.